It's hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 2:45, it's Stems and Seeds. We'll get you ready for the weekend. Speaking of this weekend, at 2:30, why this weekend matters, including a celebration of one of the best animals out there for us humans. And in mere minutes, we take a break from sports to fill you in on some history that they should have taught you in school. I'm Trey Elling. Sam Pika is behind the glass. And yes, Chad Hastings finishes up his week-long vacation today. He will be back on Monday. You can text us at 337-3776 if you'd like to chime in on anything that we've discussed so far. And please do give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave. Let's go to the Vaqueros Hotline now and welcome Kyle Creek to the show. He is known as the Captain. He's a writer, creator, instigator, and author of the book History, 111 Lessons You Should Have Learned in School. Kyle, thank you for the time. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Trey. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's get right into this. I'm going to ask you about some of these 111 lessons you should have learned in school. And I'll be honest, I wasn't even close on most of these. There were maybe one or two that I actually knew, but you stumped me on most of them. And let's start with King Peter the First of Portugal. Who is he, and why is he a great example of the need for all of us to find someone who is proud to be with you and wants to show you off in public?
So this is the beauty of writing a book like this, is people expect you to know these off the top of your head after you've crammed so many lessons in. You know, in myself, I kind of do have to refer to them back in my book. But I believe the one you're referring to is Peter, whose father had his lover beheaded. And so once his father passed and he assumed the throne and became king himself, his first order of business was enacting some much-needed revenge. He found the men who were in charge of beheading his love, and he had their hearts cut out while they were still alive, something he took great pride in himself. And then he went on to exhume her body from the ground, dress it up like a queen, and sit her next to him on the throne, where he then proceeded to have all the nobles and townsfolk come by and kiss her hands as the rightful queen, because as he said, you know, she was his first and only love. And he later went on to become a king known for absolutely brutal torture methods. And he took way too much pride in, you know, being kind of an emo kid and taking things a little too far. But yeah, definitely. I think the story reflects kind of something everyone's searching for, just in a very morbid way. I mean, you want someone who's going to go out of their way for you. You want someone who's going to, you know, be willing to, you know, even upset their family or others around them because they feel strongly enough about you. And I think that story epitomizes that to an extreme extent. Something that, I find fascinating, like I do most of these stories. And, you know, the whole premise of this book was taking these stories throughout time, you know, whether they happened hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, and showing people that we're really no different today. It doesn't matter what era we're living in. Everyone has heartbreak. Everyone has troubles with love. Everyone has arguments with their family. You know, you go through times of depression, times of achievement, and you can learn from the people in the past with these extreme examples. And again, I think people today tend to feel like the world is a horrible place when it's like, no. You look at the stuff we did to people hundreds and thousands of years ago, and trust me, the world is very tame compared to how it used to be. And so that was kind of the whole take with the book, was taking, you know, an approach of learning from the past to apply it to your today in fun ways that you probably weren't taught in school. And like you said, I mean, I tried very hard to find stories that I didn't think a lot of people knew about or hadn't heard about. And, you know, the book is predominantly stories of females, because unfortunately, I think those stories are the ones that haven't been told enough. And so I found it interesting to research myself. I found them interesting to learn about myself, and hope that readers would as well.
Where are you finding some of these nuggets? Because there are some pretty incredible stories in here that don't come anywhere close to most history books. I mean, you're having to do deep dives at the library, or just finding yourself down rabbit holes on the internet that are leading to these things?
It's a little bit of both. The book actually, I never intended to make this a book, to be honest. I had a pretty large Instagram social media following for the past 5 years. And I just started posting stories on Sundays where I'd take, you know, a historical figure and I'd try and find a way to make the story relatable. And I did it for fun. And I was going down rabbit holes. I was reading books. You know, I'd see a clip of something on History Channel and I'd be like, damn, why aren't more people talking about that? And I'd find a way to research deeper myself. I was working at an advertising agency when I first started doing this back in about 2015. I had a colleague who used to work for MSN back when it was, you know, the primary news engine. And he helped me with dig up a lot of this stuff and helped me source a lot of things. And so it really started as a hobby. I thought it was a funny way to make history relatable. And then after a couple years of doing it and having so many stories and characters and themes developed, I was talking with my dad one time, and he's the one that really kind of pushed me to put it into a book.
We're speaking with Kyle Creek, a.k.a. The Captain, about his new book, History, 111 Lessons You Should Have Learned in School. Have you always been fascinated by history, or is that something that developed over time in high school or college or sometime beyond that?
I don't think it developed until college, to be honest. I think, like most of us, I found history pretty boring because we were taught all the same things over and over. And I never remember a time in junior high or high school that I looked forward to my history courses. I grew up in Utah, and so a lot of my history is local state history, which was a lot of, you know, pioneer history, stuff like that. And I never really gave a shit. Occasionally, I'd hear something that was cool, but really, it wasn't even school. It was just my own personal research, like hearing some stories, like I said, and I'd be like, damn, that's badass. That person went through that. You know, like Keith Pena, for example, like that dude, like, it's just cool and fascinating to hear that. And I'd personally find it intriguing, and I just started really digging into it myself probably in my 20s.
So for a long time in the Middle Ages, people weren't allowed to divorce. As you point out, a woman had to literally poison her husband to get out of a prearranged marriage to kin or a family friend because it was beneficial to the bloodlines. What changed in the mid-16th century in France that benefited these women in these loveless marriages?
I'm glad that you're picking the stories that actually do kind of know off the top of my head. You're talking about the impotence courts,
yep.
if I'm correct, the story about how women finally had a way out of marriage that didn't involve death. If you were married to, say, your father's creepy old friend, like you said, for the sake of the family bloodline, and you wanted out of the marriage, you had a way out with these impotence courts where if the husband was unable to perform his duty in the bedroom, you were legally allowed to divorce him. And so what happened is a woman would accuse her husband of not being able to get it up. And in order to prove that, they'd have to go in front of witnesses and prove that the man was incapable of you know, doing the deed, which, you know, we all know stage fright's a real thing. So I'm sure that played a role at most times. But other times, you know, if you were a younger lady married to some old, it was a good way to prove that the marriage was worthless. And if he couldn't get it up, you were allowed to get a divorce. And so I'm assuming there were a lot of marital fights over that. And I can't imagine how embarrassing that would be. But also, I find it incredibly funny. And I find it incredibly, you know, fair, to be honest. I think that's kind of a good way to get back at arranged marriages, to be like, you know what? You're f-ing worthless. You're old. I don't love you. Let's prove once and for all that this marriage is worthless. And they were allowed to do that with those impotence courts.
Dude, I don't like taking a leak in the troughs at Wrigley Field next to another dude, much less trying to do that in front of a bunch of random people. If my wife took me to one of these divorce courts, I'd be screwed.
I think you'd get divorced just out of principle at that point. If someone said, hey, I want to prove that you can't have sex with me, I think out of sheer respect for yourself, you should just get the divorce.
Oh, man. Okay, so piggybacking has been a sanctimonious ritual for a lot of our lives. Bonding parents with children, drunk college kids with other drunk college kids, dwarf porn stars with their partners post-coitus. What led to piggybacking literally saving lives in the year 1140?
Oh, this is going to be the German castle. So King Conrad was trying to overtake a castle in the 1140. And him being a not so patient man, but also a fair man, told the women, you know, listen, I'm going to basically come in and destroy this castle. I'm going to give you guys a way out. I only want to kill your husbands and your sons because they're the warriors. So women, get out of the castle, and whatever you can carry, you can have. And the women, being smart and obviously, you know, loving their husbands, chose to piggyback their husbands out. And so line after line of women came out of the castle carrying their husbands on their back. And the king was stunned at first, but as a king should do, he stuck true to his word. They evacuated the castle, saved their husband's lives, and then he got what he wanted, which was the castle in the first place without having a bunch of bloodshed.
In the chapter that is titled Fear of Missing Out, there's FOMO, and then there's actually missing out on something incredible. Why is Frank Hayes a sad example of this in the world of horse racing?
You are picking the ones I know well, thank God. Yeah, so Frank Hayes was a jockey that finally got his chance to run in the Belmont. And He won his first race ever, but he suffered a heart attack just before crossing the finish line. And by the time he had crossed the line, obviously his horse still sprinting, he passed away. And when they went to go award him afterwards, they found his lifeless body still strapped into the saddle. And so literally he missed out on the biggest moment of his life, finally had his first major win, and he didn't even get to fulfill it or achieve it because, you know, like I said, he had a heart attack shortly before crossing.
Shirts and Skins is joined by Kyle Creek, a.k.a. The Captain, about his new book, History, 111 Lessons You Should Have Learned in School. What does Mark Twain have to do with the elastic bra strap?
Dude, what doesn't Mark Twain have to do with the elastic bra strap? I mean, Mark Twain, if you noticed in the book, Mark Twain is the only person who appears multiple times. And that's because I've always had kind of an affinity for Mark Twain. Growing up, my mother got me started early on some of the classic novels, and some of his were the first books I read. I remember being in second and third grade reading Mark Twain books with my mom. And, you know, I've always found him to be a very interesting man, whether it was the fact that, you know, you can read about he lay in his bed and faced the headboard instead of the footboards. He thought the headboard was more interesting to look at. He had three dogs that he named I Know, You Know, and Don't Know. So Mark Twain always had these cool eccentricities about him. And he's actually the man who patented the elastic clasp for clothing. And, you know, he originally, I'm sure, used it for something along the lines of suspenders or pants. But it is that same elastic strap and clasp that later went on to be used in, you know, common bra straps. So in a way, Mark Twain fathered the modern bra as well, in addition to being, you know, the father of the American novel. He's considered one of the greatest novelists of all time, because he was the first one to really take those American novels and make them popular. And now he's also made it much easier for women to not only support themselves, but for men to hopefully, you know, help them out in the bedroom with a little bit easier of a tool in the back.
Is it safe to assume that he could probably take care of that clasp one-handed?
You would hope that, but again, Mark Twain's a weird guy. For all I know, he carried some really nice pocket knife with him everywhere. And just, you know, he just seems like the kind of individual that would have done something like that. But, I would imagine that he was talented enough to do that with his wife.
I'm proud to say that this is one of the few that I actually knew. Graham crackers are obviously an important component in s'mores, but how does their origin story involve a different sort of gooey, marshmallowy substance?
Marshmallow substance. Yeah, so Pastor Graham, he's the inventor of the Graham cracker, and he preached that a clean diet led to a clean mind. So if you were a young teenage boy having a problem with masturbation, your parents would take you to go see the pastor, and he would put you on his special diet of, I believe, it was just milk, eggs, and his special crackers. And they were known as Graham crackers. Back then, they were just flour and water. They weren't the sweetened ones that you know today. And he, you know, really would put you on that diet, like I said, in hopes to cleanse your mind and cleanse you of the desire to want to bake your own bread or crumble your own toast, as they would say. And then later on, it was a follower of his, I think his name's John Harvey. Kellogg is his full name, but Kellogg's Corn Flakes also came from the same belief that you needed bland food in order to live a bland existence and not touch yourself.
Why is a woman named Stagecoach Mary maybe one of the most badass characters you highlight in this book?
Oh, I think the name alone explains that. Mary Field, she was born a slave, later received her freedom, and she moved to Montana, where at the age of 63, she tried to get what is known as a star route in the United States Postal Service, which is the name designated for the more difficult routes. Typically, it's going to be a low population area in the mountains, and they would contract them out rather than have an actual United States postal employee. So at the age of 63, she got one of those because she could hitch a horse or a mule faster than anyone else who auditioned. And so it was her and her trusted mule, Moses, who served the area of Cascade, Montana for about 8 years. She received the name Stagecoach Mary because despite her route being way too difficult for a stagecoach, her mail delivery service was just as reliable as the easier stagecoach routes. And she became really well known in the cities she delivered to for being foul-mouthed, whiskey drinking, very opinionated. And she got a bit of a reputation where everyone kind of started to love and revere her because she delivered their letters on time, but was also a good time to be around. So when she passed away, The town actually shut down for the day, and it was the largest funeral in attendance for her big day. And, you know, before that, they had passed a law momentarily that banned women from drinking in saloons in Montana. And Mary was the only female granted that exemption by the mayor himself, said, you know, Mary, you're still allowed to come in because, you know, we love you. And so she was a total badass. I mean, imagine the age of 63 going over the mountains of Montana with a mule trying to deliver snow. I mean, trying to deliver mail through the snow. I mean, that right there is badass. And coming from her beginnings of slavery, it just shows how much, you know, fortitude she had just to deal with this and get through it.
Shirts and Skins is joined by Kyle Creek, a.k.a. The Captain, about his new book, History, 111 Lessons You Should Have Learned in School. You know, out of the 111 stories, there really weren't many that I just kind of shrugged my shoulders at. How many of these facts did you come up with, and was it difficult to whittle it down to 111?
I think over the years, I've probably had over 200 or 300 that I've either considered for lessons or researched. Whittling it down to 111, I did strip a lot down for the book, but more so because I didn't want it to be as repetitive, where there's some similar instances with people, you know, obviously destroying kingdoms in very, you know, common ways. And so I wanted to make sure it was kind of, you know, expansive in the fact that a lot of it was a similar kind of story. So, to answer your question, it was kind of hard, but at the same time, I knew the vision I wanted for the book. And so it came together pretty quickly, and I just started eliminating everything that I felt was similar.
It's a fantastic finished project. Congratulations on that. Now, there are
Thank you.
Who can have entire conversations without saying a word, but they're usually giving something away with their eyes. And then there's the method that Thomas Edison and his wife used to chat in a crowded place without a single person knowing. How so?
Yeah, so Thomas Edison was definitely all about keeping things between him and his wife. He didn't want his relationship shared to the world like you see far too many people do on social media these days. So he taught his wife Morse code, and they would hold hands when they were at dinner parties and communicate and obviously probably talk about the other partygoers by tapping Morse code into the palms of each other's hands, which I thought was a really badass idea coming from someone who obviously had a bunch of good ideas himself. But again, there's a lot of controversy around him too, because we know he was a notorious thief of inventions. But regardless, Morse code is a great way to talk in parties. It's kind of the old-timey way of texting the person sitting right next to you, I think.
Now, Mary Toft was a strange lady in the 1700s in England. Why is she perhaps the worst pet owner of all time?
Strange is an understatement. Mary Toft was crazy. Mary Toft, like a lot of people these days, was very desperate to be famous. So she found a way to do that by giving birth to bunnies. That she would legitimately stuff pieces of bunnies or, you know, dead bunnies up her vagina and then pretend to give birth to them. And she did it in such a convincing fashion. She tricked a lot of physicians into believing that she was indeed somehow becoming impregnated with rabbits, whether through dreams at night or some other kind of weird mystical force. She got the attention of nobles, royals, politicians. And it wasn't until a politician called her out on it that it finally came to light that she had just been stuffing dead bunnies up there. And it was actually her husband that was doing the bunny purchasing for her. And I think, I can't remember, it's a dozen or more that she successfully birthed in front of people to really live this lie and gain some notoriety from being a nobody in a small town in England to being, you know, somebody that everyone thought was capable of having some sort of power.
That's a pathetic level of cucking by her husband too, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I mean, I'm all for being like a dog mom or a cat daddy and taking good care of your pets. Like, you want to throw them a birthday party, do that. You want to dress them in cute outfits, do that. But I mean, draw the line at putting them up in you. I mean, that's just trying to be a mother way too far. And that's some serious reverse Stockholm syndrome.
It is indeed. All right. Nachos are a simple but brilliant food creation. Who invented them and when?
It was actually invented by Ignacio. I can't remember the exact date, but it was on the border of Texas and Mexico where some military wives were visiting the restaurant and the chef was out. So the maitre d', which was named Ignacio, ran in the back and he quickly grabbed what he could, which was, you know, some dried tortillas, some cheese and some jalapenos. And he threw it through the oven just to try and feed these women before the, you know, because the chef was not currently there. And it turned out they love it. And shortly after, they talked about it enough that a ballpark, I believe it was a ballpark, was the first, just outside Mexico on the border of Texas, started serving them to their patrons. And that's kind of how nachos were invented. They were invented out of, you know, sheer desperation, and now they're what you eat when you're desperately drunk and trying to stand up still.
Exactly. Some of your historical info goes back less than 25 years. What did scientists learn about penguins in 1998?
Yeah, we've been lied to our whole lives, basically. I mean, everyone talks about finding their penguin, the idea that penguins mate for life. And sure, some species do it, but some don't. And there's some scientists studying them back in the 90s and found out that a lot of penguins were engaging in actual prostitution for rocks in order to build bigger nests during breeding season. So what would happen is the male penguins would go out hunting, or a portion of them would be out hunting for food, and they'd observe the females that were staying back, and they would leave their mate while their mate was out, and they would find another male that was still there, and they would have sex in exchange to take some rocks from his nest. Or they would fake like they were about to mate, and then they'd take a nest and just jet like a hooker stealing a dude's wallet. And I mean, that alone right there kind of breaks the whole fantasy that the book is meant to break. I mean, a lot of the stories in the book are kind of meant to break your beliefs of, you know, what you might have thought was historical. And I mean, even though the fact that didn't happen not too long ago, the 90s is still history. And I'd like to include it in there because it just shows how, you know, much stuff we've been taught is wrong, and how quickly like certain rumors can take off. And I just think it's funny because I still hear people to this day talk about, oh, I want to find my penguin. He's my penguin. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, you call your boyfriend your penguin, you're basically calling yourself prostitute at the same time. You got to do your research on how these animals actually are.
Oh, man. You accurately point out that running for exercise absolutely sucks, and running on a treadmill especially sucks. Who's the asshole that invented the first treadmill, and why would he do such a thing?
It was some engineer who was actually driving by a local prison, and he noticed that the prisoners weren't exactly being punished. They were kind of out in the prison yard just hanging out. And so he thought, okay, there's got to be a way we can put these guys to work. So he invented the first treadmill as a literal mill. It was a belt or a series of stairs these guys would walk on that would power a grinder to grind down some corn. And so it served dual purpose. It punished the guys, but also served a service by grinding corn for the community. And it just proves that punishment, I mean, treadmills are, they suck because they're punishment. They were invented to literally punish prisoners. And somewhere along the line, some guy got a great idea to show off some abs and say, nope, you can look like this. You know, it's literally a prison sculpted hard bod at that point. And it just completely changed how the machine was marketed from being a punishment device to being something that everyone, you know, had in their homes through the 90s. I haven't seen a treadmill in someone's house in probably 10, 15 years.
No, it's all shifted to the Peloton bikes now, right?
Yeah, I see bikes, but I haven't seen, God, I really haven't seen a treadmill in a long time.
Even going to the gym now, people don't get on the treadmills anymore. They do the stair steppers or the ellipticals. I mean, people realize treadmills just flat out suck.
They do suck. It's like takes everything that sucks about running, and then you're standing stationary, and you're with a bunch of other smelly people, and you're watching some crappy news channel. It's like everything that sucks about running is 10 times worse when there's no scenery, no movement, no fresh air. It's, they're hell. They're absolute hell.
Well said. And last question on some of the facts that you can find in history. With some of the book's subjects, we were actually taught about it in history, albeit a bullshit version propagandized by our government, like with Johnny Appleseed. What's the true story behind why he planted all of those apple trees?
I love this story. So Johnny Appleseed was a real dude, but you know, in grade school you were taught that Johnny Appleseed was doing it to feed America, when in reality Johnny Appleseed was doing it to get America drunk. His name was John Chapman. He was a well-known cider grower, and it was during the time, I think it was like the early 1800s, when if you wanted to claim land, all you had to do was technically develop it, and planting an orchard was considered developing land. And so he left his home in Massachusetts and started heading west. And as he would head west to these new lands, he would plant apple trees along the way to claim the land as his own. And then he'd come back when they were developed and he'd set up cideries on them because, you know, early American drinking culture had nothing to do with beer. It was primarily all hard cider, and it was prohibition that really destroyed that from history. Johnny grew specifically tart apples made for brewing, and when the prohibition law was passed, most of his orchards were burned to the ground, which is when the drinking in America kind of shifted away from cider to more beer and more hard alcohols. So he was a real dude, but he just was not trying to feed us. He was trying to, you know, get us drunk and help us all have a good time.
He is the captain. His new book is History, 111 Lessons You Should Have Learned in School. You can get it now wherever books are sold. Kyle, thank you so much for the time today. Really enjoyed this conversation and the book, man.
Thank you very much, Trey.
Coming up, why this weekend matters, including one of my all-time favorite animals. No, it's not a monkey or a unicorn. This is Shirts and Skins, minus Chad Hastings on the horn. Back here on Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Just two more segments without Chad Hastings for the week. He will be back on Monday. In the meantime, Sam Pika is helping me out behind the glass. Sam, you've been doing a great job with the music all week long. Who is this?
This is the Blackbirds, a song called Rock Creek Park.
Rock Creek Park, okay.
Yeah, this is one of Donald Byrd's like little side projects.
Who?
Donald Byrd, jazz musician.
Ah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, uncultured. Swine.
Yeah. A lot of people that don't quite get jazz, although that's not jazz, obviously. Jazz is something that has never clicked in my feeble mind.
Really?
But you obviously get it.
Yeah, I think it's a lot like funk music, honestly. It's all super improvisational. That word's hard to say sometimes. But
there are elements for sure, but it just gets noisy and muddled at times also. Like, there is going too abstract with music to where all of a sudden it's not making sense to most people anymore.
So you can't even do, like, Chet Baker jazz?
Yeah, you know, some jazz I'm okay with. It's just that when you start really getting out there with jazz, which inevitably every jazz musician goes there, that's when you lose me.
You're definitely not hitting up Miles Davis on the corner kind of thing.
What was Bitches Brew?
That was Miles Davis.
Yeah, that was a Miles Davis album. I think that was starting to head in that direction, but it wasn't totally insane just yet.
Yeah, by On the Corner, he's absolutely everywhere. I'll give you that. That's even a tough listen for me, and I love jazz.
All right, it's just after 2:30, which means it's time to let you know why this weekend matters.
Why Today Matters, brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialist. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialist. 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
Sam, I guess it's fitting we were talking about cereal mascots getting into a death match over the last couple of hours. And we brought up the honeybee from Honey Nut Cheerios because this weekend includes a day that celebrates the honeybee, which, in my opinion, is a top three animal on this planet.
Really? Why?
Because honeybees are really smart. They do have that animalistic instinct about them, as you can imagine. They're animals. But also, we rely on honeybees to get our food.
For pollination and whatnot?
Pollination, exactly.
I could do it. No, you couldn't.
You know, you're not the first person to say this. I feel like BK made a similar claim months or years ago. Not possible.
How hard could it be? You rub your finger on one plant, you rub your finger on another plant. Isn't that all they're doing? They just rub themselves around on it and carry it around?
I think there's some sprinkling going on as well. Maybe some light touching.
These guys are aerating pollen on these other plants?
Something like that.
I don't trust it.
So, honeybee, very solid animal. Celebrate the honeybees this weekend. We have an agreement with the honeybees. Anytime a bee is around you and you need that bee to get away because it's starting to buzz too close, just say, hey, bee, we've got an agreement here. You don't hurt me. I don't hurt you.
They'll
usually fly away.
I just statue out. I'm 100% still until that bee flies. I like we both did the same exact still position, too. That was funny. But
well, I think that's the universal statue position. Put your arms out for some reason, like you're on a surfboard.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're trying to balance on a skateboard.
Hey, this weekend is also Steve Carell's birthday. It's on Sunday. He'll be 58 on Sunday.
Wow. I did not know he was that old. Good for him. He looks great.
What are Steve Carell's three best things that he's done? It's got to start with The Office, right?
The Office. Brick was pretty good. I was a
Brick
big
Tannen.
Fan of Brick Tannen.
And Anchorman.
He's got, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but one of the first couple things he did was like this really artsy movie with Louis C.K. back in the day. Like this was like right at the beginning of his career. I cannot for the life of me remember the name, but it's pretty crazy. You can find it on Louis' website if you're still going there.
Interesting. No, not going there much these days. No, Louis is starting to go through a redemption tour of sorts, but I have not seen that one. He was also good in 40-Year-Old Virgin, of course.
Oh, I didn't even think about 40-Year-Old Virgin, yeah.
One a little bit more serious with The Foxcatcher.
See,
Little Miss Sunshine was a good movie.
After seeing him as Michael Scott, I can't watch him in serious roles anymore. I can only watch him play characters.
He was good in The Big Short, too.
The Big Short?
Yeah.
Which was, that was a couple years back?
Was that was directed by Apatow, I believe. No, that doesn't sound right.
I can't do Apatow either.
No, it was Adam McKay. Okay. One of Adam McKay's first serious efforts. What do you mean you can't do Apatow?
I don't know, man. I'm not that big a fan.
You smoke weed, get drunk, and play video games in your free time. How in the world are you not a fan of Judd Apatow? You are the audience.
I should be, but he's just, I don't know. He takes it to the umpteenth percent of all of those things.
Yeah.
And it comes off as cheesy a lot of the time and not necessarily funny.
I know what my third favorite Steve Carell thing is.
What's that?
And I think this is a movie that a lot of people ended up not liking. I enjoyed it, though. Dinner for Schmucks.
Oh, man. Dinner for Schmucks was incredible.
With Zach Galifianakis. Was Paul Rudd in that, too?
Paul Rudd? I don't think so. Unless he was the main friend that was bringing him to the Dinner for Schmucks.
Paul Rudd is in there. Yeah.
Is that another one where he's sleeping with Elizabeth Banks? I think they end up... Isn't that like the girl that he's trying to get the whole time?
I don't see Elizabeth Banks on the call sheet. No, you're thinking a 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Damn, she looks good in that movie, too.
Yeah, speaking of looking good, there are some attractive ladies who have birthdays this weekend.
Uh-oh.
Halle Berry.
Okay, yeah. I like Halle Berry's short hair better than I do long hair.
Could be on board with that. I'm good with the long hair also, but also Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, see, I'm not that crazy about J-Law. I don't know what it is. She just doesn't do it for me.
Huh. Mila Kunis, does she do it for you?
Mila Kunis does definitely not do it for me. No. I don't know why, no.
Too skinny?
Not too skinny.
Afraid that you would crush her?
I'm not a fan of the face in general. I know a lot of people think she's really, really hot, but she's just not even like when she's, you know, Jackie, like young and should be hot. She's not.
Okay. We do have a couple of food holidays this weekend. National Creamsicle Day.
Oh, wait. Which one's... Creamsicle is the orange.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I dig these big time.
They're okay.
You know they sell creamsicle sodas?
Yeah.
Bro, that's the move.
They also sell cream soda.
Yeah.
Flavored beer.
Oh, wait. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
I think they do creamsicle flavor beer also.
Dude, where? How do I find this?
Maybe go to Whole Foods.
Oh, God.
Whole Foods or Central Market. They do the hoity-toity beers.
Yeah, so it's going to be $10 million for a six-pack. I can't do this.
I'd be shocked if you weren't a fan of this day. This is happening on Sunday. National Bratwurst Day?
Hell yeah, bro.
Okay, thank goodness.
Yeah. Who's not a fan of brats?
Look, I like a bratwurst. I don't eat a ton of bratwurst, though.
Well, so, too, I don't fully understand what the difference is between, like, a sausage and a bratwurst. What makes a brat? I like saying brat, by the way, too. It's really satisfying.
Difference between sausage and brats. Let's see. From the Kitchen, which spells their stupid website without an E. sausage is a preparation of ground meat that can be found in dried or fresh varieties and sold either in casing as links or in bulk. Bratwurst is a specific type of fresh sausage link made with pork or veal.
Ah, so it's a pretentious sausage.
I don't know about pretentious necessarily.
Well, how do you feel about boudins if you're going in the sausage realm?
Keep the rice out of my sausage, please.
Bro,
if I want to add rice to the sausages that I'm consuming, I will add the rice on my own.
You're insane. Boudin is the superior sausage in every single way.
Superior to what?
Everything else that calls itself a sausage.
No. I'm taking Terry Black sausage on Barton Springs. Best sausage in the city and honestly has ruined sausage for me. By the way, somebody mentioned this on the Specs text line the other day, and I fully agree. This town, for as good as it does barbecue, they do not do sausage very well. I've been to a lot of really good barbecue places in this town and walked away satisfied with the brisket, with the pulled pork, with the chicken and turkey a lot of the times, but the sausage is just not good.
Yeah, the sausage is definitely the one thing I most consistently put barbecue sauce on, and I feel like when you have to put barbecue sauce on barbecue, that's when it's like, okay, it was mediocre barbecue.
Exactly, very well put. All right, that's why this weekend matters. Coming up next, it is the final stems and seeds of the week. You're listening to Shirts and Skins on the Horn. Final segment of today's and this week's Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. That means one more segment of Chad Hastings on vacation. He will be back on Monday. Let's take a quick look at the Specs text line, 337-3776. This guy says, I have a garden and there were no bees this year. Very scary, but had no vegetables to speak of. And the only tomatoes I picked were the ones that I pinched the bloom on, which pollinates the plant. Neat trick, by the way.
See?
So yes, bees are important.
But it also sounds like we can do it. I'm going around pinching blooms from now on, bro.
This lazy-ass society is not going to go around pollinating its own whatchamacallits. And by the way, when you get to the mass-produced vegetables, you're really screwed.
Do they have bees, like, that they just let out at farms like that? Is that a thing?
I mean, hivaries are a thing, so I'm sure. Apiaries are a thing.
An apiary?
Yeah.
It's like a monkey jail? What is that?
It's a controlled beehive, essentially.
Oh, okay, okay.
Or a place that has a bunch of different beehives that can then be used to pollinate the rest of the land that you're on or other people's lands.
I feel like if I ever get really, really rich and I do start dressing super ridiculously, I'm going to incorporate beekeeper masks into my everyday outfit.
Yeah, let's see. You're going to get tired of that one.
Why?
Pretty quickly.
I could get them in different colors. I would look fly as hell.
Yeah, but you're also having to look through that mesh.
That's fine.
Gets old after a while, trust me.
I see everything through a haze already, so what's the difference?
You love Dreamsicle, Sam?
I love
Dreamsicle. I mentioned that there is a Dreamsicle beer out there. Thank you to this person for letting us know. Orange cream from Martin House Brewing Company. Sam needs to stop by the HEB in Miller on 51st Street to check that one out.
I'm there. After the show, come see me.
How about this person? Bees are insects, not animals, you idiot. That's what this person said to me because I called bees an animal. Hey, guess what? Insects are animals, moron. Thanks for listening, though, and thanks for texting in. A lot of people believe that Little Miss Sunshine is a good Steve Carell movie. What was the other one that they mentioned? Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. It is the final segment of this week's show. That means it's time for Stems and Seeds. No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks. Stems and Seeds brought to you by Audiovisual Consultations, avconsultations.com. Tom McKay doesn't think much of Sam right now because Sam didn't know that sausage and bratwurst were the same thing.
I'm sorry, who else had to Google it, my
friend? I Googled it. But I was pretty sure, but you asked me a question, and I'm like, oh, great. Now I think I know something that I may not. I need to look it up just to be sure. And bratwursts are essentially an offshoot. It's a more specific version of a sausage. I don't know if you've seen this video floating around, Sam. I saw it on CBS Sports earlier. I don't know why they would put something like this on the front page. This is the headline, and they have the video that corresponds with it. Russian powerlifting champion breaks both knees during 800-pound squat attempt.
That sounds like exactly the kind of thing I would watch. That's why that's on there.
You want to see that?
Yes,
as somebody
dude.
Who has suffered knee injuries yourself.
Exactly. I know exactly how much it hurts, and I still want to see it. It's going to get clicks, bro.
It does not look good.
Really? Does he go sideways?
No, he goes straight back, and his knees, snap.
Oh, man, I need to see this video.
So just be careful.
That video
is out there today.
Are you trying to tell me that injuries are not one of your favorite parts of sporting events when you can actually see a good injury? A good bone break through the skin or something like that?
No, if I know an injury is coming, I don't usually watch it.
Oh, man, I am rewinding, pausing, playing. I'm looking for the viscera, man.
That's just a certain bloodlust that I've never had. Like, even when I watch something that was full of that sort of violence back during my teenage years and early 20s, like boxing, like whenever I would see a guy really get opened up in terms of a cut forming around the eye or lip or something like that. It just doesn't do it for me. And I can deal with the real life version of that okay. But it's just watching it happen in sports, it just makes me queasy. And so to watch like a dude like flat out break his ankle to where the foot ends up 90 degrees, or to see a leg snap.
Yeah.
Like the Joe Theismann injury from so many years ago, and there have been plenty of examples since then. Like, no. I'm not sticking around for that.
After the show, I'm probably going to watch injury compilations now. This is what you've done to me.
Do you remember the Louisville basketball player? I think it was the Final Four, where he steps and the bottom half of his leg, it just goes out.
Yeah.
Like the skin just becomes jello-y.
Oh, man. I remember one of my...
See, you're cringing when you're saying, oh, man, like you enjoy
it. That's the good part about it. It's okay. Like, you know, it's like watching, what's it, like watching a, or like a looky-loo, rubbernecking. You gotta, you know, you gotta look, you're curious.
I also don't like seeing dudes get knocked out. Like watching a guy take a vicious hit in football and to see him like falling back with the frozen arms to where you can tell he's out cold.
Yeah.
That doesn't do it for me either.
The one thing I don't like watching people get knocked out in is the UFC. Because then they have no protection over their head and they're falling straight to the ground.
What are you talking about? That should be the crown jewel for you in this sickness that you possess.
Well, I don't want anyone to get permanently brain damaged. I just want them to, you know, maybe break an arm, break a leg, poke something through the skin.
UFC people will tell you they're not suffering long-term brain damage.
Really?
Because it's happening so quickly and they're not taking the repeated blows to the head the boxers do. That's been the narrative for a while now. Perhaps that's changed in the last couple of years.
One of my favorite breaks, now that we're talking about the UFC... was, did you ever see the one where Anderson Silva was trying to pull a leg kick on, I don't even remember who he was fighting, but he hit him just right to where he broke his leg on the other guy's leg.
Yeah.
And it wrapped around and like kicked his own leg.
Blech.
That was gnarly, bro. I loved it. Oh, man, can we get a tray puke on this? Let's see if we can get a tray puke on this, folks.
You just about did that, because I did see that one. Oh, God, watch his leg wrap around like that. It just looked like he was Plastic Man for a second.
Yeah, he gave the other dude's leg a hug with his leg.
All right, a couple of other headlines on our way out here. Tom Izzo is 100% certain there will be a college basketball season. Good for that. Dallas Cowboys hit the practice field for the first time today. CeeDee Lamb made a couple of plays. Donovan Wilson, the A&M alum, made a couple of plays at safety. And Joe Looney was starting at center. Sam, we made it. Full week's worth of shows. Minus Chad once again, but he will be back on Monday. Thank you to everybody who helped out this week, specific to today. Thanks to Joe Cook of Inside Texas, Dustin McComas of Orange Bloods, Kyle Creek, a.k.a. The Captain, for his very entertaining new book, Effing History, 111 Lessons You Should Have Learned in School. And thank you so much to Sam Pika for helping out all week long. Thanks to you as well for listening, for texting, for all your contributions. It is greatly appreciated. Triple Option with RBKD is coming up next. I'm Trey Elling. Have yourself a fantastic weekend. Shirts and Skins will be back Monday at noon. In the meantime, I'll talk to you later and hook 'em.